welcome to Hype episode 179. My name is Selena. I am back after a lengthy absence that was actually only 1 week, but time passes really strangely when you don't do Hype. And I have Pam here with me.
Hello.
It's a reunion.
It is. I feel like we've been gone forever.
It's so weird. And like, I know we say this every time that there's been like a week or two break, but it always feels really strange. But I'm so glad that we're back and we have so much to talk about on Hype this week. Last week, obviously, without me, Pam had Chelsea on to talk about Black Panther, which was really nice. We will have a little bit more Black Panther talk this week just because I saw it. I'm so excited. And we have a bunch of movie news and TV show news and some follow-up TV show of the week, which I'm also really excited to talk about. Basically, it's going to be a really fun show. But before we get into any of that, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information. If you have any comments for this podcast or if you have any suggestions for future episodes, anything you want us to talk about, then you can send us an email, hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. And you can also find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com, as well as Instagram, which is
Hypeable hype, right.
That's right. On there. And of course, we also have a Patreon. If you are interested in supporting the show, then you can subscribe for $2 a month or more if you want to. That's over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. We have bonus discussions every week, as well as other special features, including videos and giveaways and bonus content relating to our Merlin rewatch series, which is going on right now. We have 2 episodes out so far. Next time we record, we'll be talking about episodes 4 and 5, I believe, of season 1. And it's going to be really exciting. So stay tuned for updates on that one. And we hope to see you over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. All right. So let's see. What do we have to start? We have How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. So let's start. Actually, let's start with you and let's get some...
with me?
Yes. Just for some variety.
Okay, sure. You know what? I just realized that this doc might be a little misleading because I put one of my How We Hypes was A Wrinkle in Time. I have not seen the movie, but I just wanted to let you guys know that I did order a copy of the book on Amazon, and I have started reading it. So hopefully I'm done by the time the movie comes out. I got to kind of just whiz through it basically at this point. But it's kind of really a cool reading experience because, you know, we've talked a little bit before here about how the trailers are really great because neither of us have read the book. So it just looks like a really cool movie, but it doesn't necessarily give a lot away. Like, there's still a lot of mystery and intrigue surrounding the idea of the plot. And the book kind of starts off that way, too. Not that it, like, I've gotten to any point in the book that they show off in the trailer, but just, like, I'm kind of, like, reading this book, not really knowing what's going to happen other than at some point this girl's going to go try and find her father who's disappeared. So, yeah, it's been really fun so far. I'm about 50 pages in, but I should be done soon because it's not a very long book.
Nice. Yeah, it's a children's book, right?
Yes. Madeline Lengle is the author.
Yeah, yeah. It's a you really should have read it. So it's good you're doing it now, and I really should as well.
You got all teacher on me. Like, you really should have read it.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, I hear you should have read it.
Yes.
But that's really exciting. And obviously, A Wrinkle in Time is coming out really soon. And they already had their big premiere. It's getting so much praise. I'm so excited to see it. But I'm also so, so, so excited to talk about the movie that is on everyone's minds. And no, it's not Annihilation. Because A, it's not out yet. And B, I've seen the reviews, so I'm scared. But it is Black Panther. Obviously, it's been out for a couple of weeks. And I have really wanted to go see it. But honestly, like, between all the work I've had to do and the fact that I've, like, had less money than I, like, anyway, it's not important, but I haven't been able to go see it, basically. But for my birthday this weekend, me and my mother and my brother went to see it, and it was You know how those movies where, especially Marvel movies, you hear so many good things and you just start to think like, it's not going to be true, you know, like everyone says.
Honestly, I was scared for you.
Right? Like, you know, people are like, oh, Spider-Man is so great. And then I watch it and I didn't think it was that great. But oh my God, everything was true with Black Panther. It was genuinely just so good. And I genuinely have not, first of all, felt like that excited about a movie in a scarily long time, but also just, and I'm sure you guys talked it to death last week already, but just the fact that obviously so much representation, so many women, like mm-hmm. so many women, like how effortless Ryan Coogler made it look to include so many women in roles that in any other movie, including any other Marvel movie, would have gone to men. And yeah. how amazing that was. And just how the story, how good it was. Like there was obviously like echoes of like Hamlet and stuff like that. But that was done really elegantly. So it felt like an homage to like other stories without feeling like repetitive. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I loved it. I loved the story. I loved the women. Okoye is like I can't even. She's my favorite. She was so cool, but they were all so cool. And like T'Challa himself, obviously, was such a good main character because he's like genuinely likable. He's a lot like, I think, Steve Rogers.
Oh my God.
His character.
Chelsea said the exact same thing.
Did she really?
Yes. I love that you like that came across because we were talking about that. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Like they're just
that is different. So funny.
They are existing in different eras, but. Yes.
I didn't listen to it yet because like I didn't want to listen to it before I'd seen the movie, obviously, and I just saw the movie like 2 days ago. But oh my God, but she's so right. Like it's so true. Like that's exactly the type of character he is, and I love that type of character. Mm-hmm. And like I'm just so in awe of this movie, and I'm just like honestly the thing that strikes me the most is all the women and how this movie just puts like all other movies to shame, you know, because how effortlessly it incorporates, obviously, everyone's person of color, you know, there's like two white dudes in it, that's it. And it's like, that's it. And then there's all these women, and they just work so well. And the characters are so amazing. And I just like, I'm so happy. I'm so happy for this movie. I'm so happy to see everyone, like everyone who is black and who's like, lack this representation are getting it. And there's so much hope about what it inspires in Hollywood moving forward, and all the records it's breaking, and everyone's like, whoever said that like people of color or women or both or you know that don't sell tickets are like just propagating propaganda to get their way, and now it's proven false, and I'm so happy.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, I love that you just said that because I was talking to a friend of mine and they were saying like, oh, like I feel like this was before the movie Amy came out, but she said that she didn't really like that the clips they were using to promote the movie via radio advertisement were just like really hokey, like nothing you've never seen, revolutionary, just, you know, like they're things that are meant to spark up, you know, excitement amongst the general audience. And she was saying that she didn't really like that because she's just like, everything is it's like overused. And I totally agree with like the idea of that, because I've definitely talked before about how I dislike that the idea of the word revolutionary is so like, it's tossed around like confetti these days. But at the same time, like after I went to see Black Panther, I was like, no, like I understand why people are saying this, because in a way it is. And it's not necessarily just about representation that this movie is revolutionary, although that's a big part of it. But just in the way that they were able to seamlessly, you know, like you said, just like it just felt so easy for him to include all of these women who had their own stories, who weren't just there to drive like the male plot along. Like, you know, you can like imagine that all of them exist on their own, you know, like they wouldn't fall flat without the company of men. And they just made it look so easy that it kind of makes everybody else look bad, you know?
It does. Right. Exactly. Like that's the thing, is that we're talking so much about like female representation, obviously, and how a lot of the time that is like woefully not intersectional, intersexual, intersectional is what I mean. And like how this movie obviously accomplishes that perfectly, but also just how even when there are women, a lot of the time they are like cardboard cutouts, or like their stories are in service of a man. And what I found about Black Panther, because on one hand you could say, yeah, like they're all literally in service of T'Challa, you know, but that is like not important. That's just the framework of their existence. Like we're all in service of something at the end of the day. And I think the motivations that they gave to all these women and the relationships that they gave them, honestly, it's more personality than most characters get in any movie that aren't the lead one or two or three. And then everyone who surrounds them are usually pretty shallow, especially in like superhero movies and stuff. There's not a lot of like, maybe they're like personality, like they're funny, you know, mm-hmm. but they aren't, they don't have an agenda that is clearly identifiable as being genuine to their character and not just convenient for the plot. And I think that that is what this movie did. Like, I don't want to get too specific, but I think the entire sequence when the three women, Nakia and Okoye and what's her name?
The most wonderful
Shuri, who was also just so amazing. When they all went to the mountain, to M'Baku. And that scene was so great. And they so perfectly managed to, and the mother as well, Angela Bassett, who is a queen and amazing. The way that they talked and the way that they explained what they were all about and stuff like that was so seamless and rich and just so many layers of personality and story. And you kind of felt like at the point that the story could, that's, I think this is like what makes it so great. You felt like at one point the story could carry on without T'Challa. Like, not that you didn't want him to be in the story, but the other characters were so fully realized that this, the actual main plot could have carried on if he just went away in the middle of the movie. And I think that is really spectacular because that speaks to the level of depth in the characters that surround him and how much you are already as an audience member attached to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because you still care about them. Like, it's not all about him, even though he is, obviously it is all about him. But you know, does that make sense? Like,
yes. Yeah, no, I think that you're totally right. Because what the Ryan Coogler and Cole is, I can't remember the full name of his co-writer, but I think his last name is Cole. What they were able to do is, without obviously having to give too much backstory because they're pressed for time, they've created secondary and tertiary characters that are fully realized to the point where you feel like they exist, like they're out there, yeah. You know, and they've all lived their own lives and they're all still living their own lives. And they are all like the main characters of their own stories. And, yes. And you're right. Like, even if T'Challa was gone, like everybody from the Fantastic Women to the other Wakandians, M'Baku and Wakabi, and even like Eric Killmonger himself is the main villain. Like, they're so fully formed that you could follow each and every one of their stories on their own. And the same goes for the women, you know, there's so much there to play around with. And at the same time, it's kind of unfortunate that, you know, I have not read the comics because I don't know how much, obviously there's different variations of Black Panther over the course of Marvel's history. So I don't know if like they took cues from a specific trajectory of the comic book story, or if they just, you know, aside from the one where T'Challa is like the king of Wakanda, but I don't know how much else like they kind of like, because they also wove in a lot of like, real world stuff in there, you know, into the plot. So I would just be interested to know if any of our listeners have read the comics, if you felt like they were true to the story, or if they really kind of just played around a lot with like the essence of these characters and what they stood for and created like kind of like in a sense this whole new world. Either way, I have not heard much complaint about this movie. So even if they did kind of imagine a new storyline for these characters, I don't see anyone complaining about it. So that's good.
Yeah. Yes, it's really been like an astonishing success. And I will say, this is really funny because, and that's the last thing I'll say, and then we'll move on. Although I'm sure we're going to continue to talk about it in the coming weeks and the post-credit scenes as well and stuff. But when we left the movie theater, like, first of all, my brother was like so, you know, like he was just, he loved it. And his favorite was Chala. and he just thought it was amazing. But my mother said something that I think is really interesting too. It's just sort of a non-American perspective, is that it is so nice for the foreign market to, for us anyway, to see. I know that this is not an American story because it is Africa, but it is also seen, like, viewed through the eyes of African Americans, obviously. And to just see some stories come out of American cinema that aren't all the same demographic of people. Because, like, when we see American movies, we do tend to get a lot of that white middle class, you know, that type of person. Like, that's all we see. And I think for someone who is not American, everything that comes out of that country is kind of like half fictional to begin with. So it's like, it's nice that we're beginning to see some variety in the kinds of stories being told, and just the types of, like, making, not just in like art, cinema and stuff, but actually in on the big screen. That goes for Moonlight as well, obviously, that goes for a bunch of stuff. And I think that that is something that maybe, you know, has been undervalued for a while too, this idea that only one kind of America is marketable to the world is not true. It's just a fiction, right? It's like, we've seen American high schools with their lockers and their cheerleaders and their stuff. Like, we've seen that. That doesn't exist over here. That's like, that's some kind of fantasy land somewhere else in the world. But we've seen that enough now, and it's time to, like, see something else. So I'm really happy. And I think there's a reason why it's doing so well internationally, and it's not just because it's so amazing, but also just because people are so ready to see more.
Yeah, you know? Something different.
Yeah.
That's always exactly. Really nice. We talk about that too a lot, just here in general, how it's like sometimes, like, reboots, sequels and stuff like that, we get really excited for some of those. So we're not like anti by any means, but it's always great when we get to see something different and something creative. And yeah. Yeah.
And that said, I mean, and I don't know if we'll get to this week, but at some point we're going to be talking about, like, how sometimes reboots can also contribute to updating and adding something different. Like, One Day at a Time is a perfect example, right? Like, mm-hmm. We talked about that a few weeks ago. So that can also be a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, very quickly, yes? Before we move on, I have one more Howie hype. Just wanted to let everybody know that today, when we're recording the 27th of February, is the official release date for the Coco DVD. And if you enjoyed this movie, you would probably want to check out the DVD, because they have a lot of really awesome special features. I've been kind of like whittling through all of them in my spare time, because there's 2 hours of special features total. They have a lot of like behind the scenes making of this movie, which is really, really great, because like so much like love and dedication went into just kind of creating the film. And they also have a lot of really great featurettes as well. Like, my favorites are Path to Pixar, where a lot of the Latino filmmakers that worked on Coco talked about how they got from, you know, where they grew up to making it as Pixar animators and stuff like that. And it's just like a really nice tie into what we were talking about with Black Panther and how, you know, representation matters. Because when you start listening to a lot of these people's stories, you realize that it's kind of miraculous that they were able to visualize at some point a future where they could work at a major animation studio, because many of them came from communities where people like them did not go off to do that, did not make movies, mm-hmm. did not animate and stuff like that. So that was really inspiring as well. There's a really great special featurette on the music and how they went about finding the proper sound for the film. And there's also another feature called 1,000 Pictures a Day, where they show you the raw source material that they took of Oaxaca, Mexico, which is where they went to research the film before they even started shooting. So yeah, lots of really awesome features on the Coco 4K Ultra HD DVD and Blu-ray. And if you're a fan of this movie, definitely pick it up if it's available in your country. I feel like maybe it's not even out yet in Denmark.
Nope. I mean, I think it's in cinemas now, but I haven't been to the cinema like at all except to see Black Panther. I will wait for it, I guess, to come out on DVD over here. I'm very, very excited to see it. All right, so let's move on to the news now, where we have a bunch of stories to talk about. And the first one, a few of these are a little old because me and Pam together haven't been doing one of these shows for a couple of weeks. But these are some of the biggest stories over the past couple of weeks that we felt were really important to talk about. And the first one is the Solo, a Star Wars Story trailer, which dropped on February 5th. But we haven't talked about it yet, so I really wanted to make sure we got it in here. Now, obviously, everyone knows that the Solo movie is a Han Solo origin story that nobody asked for. The trailer debuted at the Super Bowl, and it's very sort of interesting. Before we even get to talking about the trailer itself, it is curious that it took this long for a trailer to drop. The movie comes out in May, and it's now, like, it was the beginning of February when it came out. This is the first proper look we've gotten at it. We got some posters that looked really nice, and we got some information finally. The trailer itself is very sort of humor heavy, I would say. Quote unquote humor heavy. It's showing off Alden Ehrenreich's take on Han Solo, which I, to be fair, seems pretty good. And it's showing off Emilia Clarke. It's kind of teasing the main story. We obviously get a great look at the new Lando.
That's all I'm here for, TBH. Donald Glover.
It seems to be what everyone is there for. There was only like one or two brief glimpses of him, and then it sets up, I think, like, this is all fine, but then it sets up what I think is shaping up to be a really awkward and cliche, talk about your cliche stories of this young Solo who's been running scams on the streets since he was a child, and he gets himself involved in all kinds of shenanigans. And I'm curious what you think of this trailer. I'm curious if anyone actually was excited for the movie after seeing this trailer.
The Solo origin story movie, as we've talked about before on the show, has been riddled with controversy. First, because, as Selena joked, it's the origin story we never asked for, but also just because there's been so much drama with regards to directors attached to this project. Lucasfilm and Disney let go of the original two directors, brought in Ron Howard to kind of finish things up. So I think just as a source of intrigue, like, I am very interested to see what they were able to kind of slap together. I'm sure they didn't slap anything together because this is a big budget project, but at the same time, like everybody else, I'm just curious to see how they pulled it off because they were so far into principal production when they decided to switch gears on the director front. So that in and of itself intrigues me, based just like alone on what they were able to come up with as far as like an end product for this movie. As far as the trailer goes, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that Alden Ehrenreich does a really good job of capturing the essence of Han Solo and Harrison Ford's take on Han Solo. I think that if you think this trailer looks a little hokey, that is probably true to what Star Wars kind of is, because I think that, like, we talk a lot about Star Wars, like the original trilogy is, like, we talk about it very like highbrow because it's very nostalgic, but like Star Wars like had a lot of really like hokey, cheesy moments to it amidst all the action and all of the reasons why it's kind of gone down in history as one of the quintessential space odysseys of like this century. So I think that if they're going for that vibe, then that fun kind of like ragtag group of people going off on an adventure is like definitely captures the spirit of what I imagine a young Han Solo would kind of be like, because he is kind of like this rough and tough, you know, dude. He's like the original space cowboy. So,
right.
Those are my thoughts.
I think I just, like, obviously the production issues are going to color our perception of it as well. I think at the moment, like, I'm just feeling like And I think Michal did an excellent feature about this over on Hyperbole, where she said that this is really a piece of the puzzle that we don't need because we already have the basic information. And it doesn't look based on this trailer. And we could be totally wrong. They could be hiding some huge, really exciting secret. But it looks like, you know, we knew what the story was before. And we're going to be seeing it. And it's just going to be the story as we think it is. And it's just going to fill in blanks in a really sort of unnecessary way. Like, it's just going to diffuse the mystery without actually adding anything to it. Like it's a draw by the dots. I don't know what that kind of thing is called, but like, you know, when you draw the dots.
That works. I knew what you were talking about.
Right. But that's pretty much what it feels like. And it's going to be such a huge surprise if this movie actually manages to be anything beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it won't be. You know, I'm not totally writing it off, but it's really hard to imagine. And the trailer definitely did not do anything, I think, to assure anyone that it was going to be anything more than what we all think it's going to be, which is like a movie that might have broken some waves in 2008. But, you know, the year of Black Panther, it's hard to I think our expectations are a little high at the moment.
I mean, you know? They definitely have set the bar way, way high. And I think that you're right. On one hand, you know, sometimes with these big blockbusters, I kind of have the same philosophy, which is that if I can go to the movies and watch your film and have a good time, then okay, whatever. Like, did we need it? No, but I had a nice time at the theater with my friends. At the same time, if that's the case with Solo, it'll just be a little bit disappointing because you also kind of think in the back of your head, they could have used these resources elsewhere to expand the universe, you know? And I think that that's where, like, that's what this comes down to and what, why a lot of people are thinking along the same mind frame that, you know, like you said, Michal, just like put forth so eloquently. It's like, we already have all the answers, and in a time when they are working on expanding this universe to bring us actual like new information, it's kind of like, well, why do we need this when you could be telling us something else that would be integral to the plot in some way, you know? At least like with Rogue One, while many were disappointed with how it turned out, there was like a full-fledged story, you know what I mean? Like there was still like,
sure,
there was still some stuff in there that like we didn't know, and now we have like the actual canon, I guess, of what went down before.
Sure, yeah.
The Luke story. Right. So,
although that said, putting resources towards expanding the Star Wars universe is not always going to be met with any more enthusiasm. But I'm moving into the next story.
Ooh, nice segue.
Another announcement that came pretty early this month was the fact that the Game of Thrones showrunners, aka the people doing everyone's most hated show that doesn't exist, Confederates, have been hired to write a new series of Star Wars movies. Now, notably, this does not appear to be the same series of Star Wars movie that The Last Jedi director Rian Johnson is set to helm. So I don't know if anyone's keeping track of how many Star Wars movies are coming, but it seems to be a whole lot. Lucasfilm announced that David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, who of course created and showrun HBO's Game of Thrones, which is wrapping up in 2019, will tackle a new set of stories in the galaxy far, far away. Did somebody say space dragons? Suddenly I'm more intrigued. Thanks, Michal. this is kind of part of Star Wars and Lucasfilm's overall plan to expand the Star Wars universe. It feels like the Star Wars franchise is trying to move in the same direction as the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where they have a bunch of like vaguely connected stories set in the same universe, and who knows if we're going to have some kind of like Star Wars Avengers movie down the line. Like who knows what they're planning? We probably won't be alive to see it, because with all these movie series, it's going to be done in like 3005.
That's honestly like my biggest fear in the world.
Not death.
I'm
just
gonna
like
be
all
that
the movies
you
won't you
see
get to
on the
watch.
News. It's like you know, when I'm really, really old, like Granny's last wish was to see
Star Wars Cursed Child 15
because she's a masochist.
Will Scorvis get together in this one?
Will it finally happen?
Or you're 95 and waving your
stick. I want to be 105 at least, but yes. Like
Okay. Well, you have time for a couple of more installments. Anyway. the interesting thing about this, you know, it's not going to be associated with the Skywalker saga. So it's not going to be associated with Rian Johnson's trilogy. Kathleen Kennedy said of Benioff and Weiss that their command of complex characters, depth of story and richness of mythology will break new ground and boldly push Star Wars in ways I find incredibly exciting. I'm glad she didn't say where Star Wars has never gone before, although that would have been funny. So there's a couple of things that people have been noting about this. First of all, I think people are increasingly frustrated that for a saga that is like ostensibly female friendly, you know, they have Rey, they have Kathleen Kennedy herself, it continues to be a exclusively male, white male production room, you know, in terms of writers and so far directors as well. And people are getting really tired of that monotony. I think there's also a general ill will towards Benioff and Weiss after some of the story choices they've made on Game of Thrones, as well as the Confederacy series, which still, I mean, to be fair, to be completely fair to them, I'm not sure how much we can judge the show that everyone judged before. You know, like it's hard to sort of cast them into a pit of hate because of that. But I do think that the concerns against Game of Thrones are like totally warranted. So that's like a couple of the main concerns people are having. And then I think in general, and this is obviously my biggest one, is that I'm really beginning to have a Star Wars fatigue. You know, like if I'm being 100% honest, then the only good thing for me that came out of Star Wars since the original trilogy was The Force Awakens. And anything beyond that is like, I don't actually have any basis for trusting that this is going to be something that I'm going to enjoy. So I'm just a little bit ambivalent about this. I'm curious, certainly, what comes of this, and I'm curious what this means for Confederacy. But other than that, I'm like, could take it or leave it, you know?
Yeah, I thought that this was a really interesting choice. And when I first read this headline, I was actually kind of worried that because, like you said, there are so many Star Wars entities in the works currently, I was actually kind of worried that they were getting tapped to write the third installment of the new trilogy. And that really worried me a lot.
Stay away from Rey. She has enough problems.
That was my thought process. Exactly. Because unfortunately, like you said, like not that all of these issues that Hollywood has in terms of like not being able to include representation, diversity, great roles for women into the storylines, they're all easy fixes. But when you bring in people that have a proven track record of not writing their mistakes over the course of the 8 seasons soon that HBO has given them to play around with, it gets a little harder to kind of trust that they're going to see the error in their ways in new projects. You know, it's not necessarily that they can't, but just that they've proven that they don't maybe care.
And right.
And so in that sense, it's like, well, why would we assume that they would do that with another entity? And I can't remember where I was reading it, but I was reading this really great feature about why the diversity in front of the camera in Star Wars is important and why it should continue to be thing that follows through in terms of all of the entities that will come after the new trilogy wraps up, but also talking about how it's important for them to start diversifying behind the camera as well. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with that. So it's kind of like it would be a shame to see them take a step back as a franchise with anything new that they put out now that we've seen what can be in terms of, you know, characters like Poe and Finn and Rey and even Rose Tico, you know, all these new characters that we've we've gotten to know over the course of the last few years. It would just be nice to see them continue to do things like blind cast and to diversify and to bring new voices into space that have never been there before, you know, as far as like the cinematic front goes. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I will wait and see, but you're right. I think it's a good point that the issue with Weiss and Benioff is how good we are being told they are and how little they seem to be acknowledging the problems people have with their works. That's actually a really good point. And I think that might be like the issue with Confederate as well, mm-hmm. was that this completely tone deaf project was announced. And then the actual African-American people that were working with them kind of tried to do damage control, but people were still like, well, yeah, but Benioff and Weiss are still not taking any, like, it seems like, you know, I don't want to mention any other names because I don't want to get us in trouble again, but it seems like they are a part of the brood of writers right now that are choosing to close their ears to some criticism, and that is concerning. I don't think that's the case for all writers, but yeah, certainly some.
And it's hard because, like, you know, we have both talked about how we really have enjoyed Game of Thrones, and sometimes we haven't over the course
of
the over the course of the time that it's been on air, and we're both really excited for the final season to come out. But at the same time, like, you can love something and also talk about the problems that it has, and mm-hmm. and I think that that's really important, and I love that we're able to do that on this show. But I feel like every once in a while we get new listeners and they're like, how can you say this but then say that? It's like, well, yeah, because we care about the entity, so like, that's why, you know? So anyway, speaking of new HBO entities.
Nice.
I know. I was trying to think of like a really good like fire segue, but I couldn't come up with it. So HBO is actually currently, or they have been working on a book to film adaptation for Ray Bradbury's iconic sci-fi novel, Fahrenheit 451. And we finally got our first trailer for the film this week. We actually got it last night. The new film stars Michael B. Jordan as a fireman who in this world, firemen, I feel like everybody's read Ray Bradbury's novel at this point, or have heard of it. But if you haven't, it was actually published in 1953, and it tells the story of a future American society in which books are outlawed, and firemen are actually individuals who are tasked with burning books that are found. And Jordan plays the film's protagonist, Guy Montag, who is a fireman, and Michael Shannon plays Montag's boss, Captain Beatty. And the first trailer kind of really does a nice job of kind of bringing this dystopian time in that Bradbury had envisioned to life in a new way. The story, you know, has lived in infamy for a very long time, or infamy maybe is not the right word, but, you know, like Fahrenheit 451 is something that we talk about at least once a year when Banned Book Day comes out, because while we can't imagine a world where books are outlawed, there's still like banned books, all around the world. You know, books get banned all the time in certain districts and stuff like that. So while it is a work of fiction, it's also kind of this thing that's very real. And watching this trailer kind of makes you realize that with things that are that, and that's the great thing about sci-fi, like, you know, it kind of brings to life issues that could potentially be very real today, you know, and mm-hmm. when, you know, especially in America with the media buzz going on and having a president in power that, you know, likes to tear down certain publications for not just blindly following with his vision, it's kind of like, wow, like this is much more relevant than I think sometimes we think it can be. Because it's this idea of a society is so horrific, and yet we aren't far off. And it's really great that they're adapting it, and I'll be interested in checking it out. It comes out in May. There's no like set release date, but if you're interested in taking a look, we have the trailer up on Hypeable.
It looks really, really good. I just watched it before the show. I was not aware of this even though it's Ray Bradbury and I feel like woefully incompetent. But it looks so good. It almost feels like it could take place in the same universe as Handmaid's Tale.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's very, very interesting. And I think, like you said, it's more timely than you would think. Also, because if we like, obviously, the story itself of the destruction of independent thought and knowledge, I think is a, and everything is digitized, I think is a very pressing concern. And there's a lot of, I don't know how, if the, I mean, you guys have other problems, but at the moment in Denmark, there's a big debate about how like youth are using technology and how, what it's doing to their brains and how scared the kids themselves are of how much they're using it and how the parents are kind of like feel powerless to it. So that's like a kind of an interesting sort of side angle to it. But I also just think on much more practical, like one-to-one level, bookstores are closing. What is it? Barnes & Noble? I don't know if they, some kind of big bookstore just fired like a bunch of its employees.
Barnes & Noble, yep.
It was Barnes & Noble, yeah. And libraries are losing funding, you know, they're throwing books away by the millions. Like, aside from just banning, you know, banned books, obviously, I think just the loss of books and the active destruction of books. I think it's so interesting. There's so many angles where it's extremely relevant. And honestly, anything that could inspire people to love or want to protect the physical book is something mm-hmm. that I will support, because I think it's important. And, you know, have Michael B. Jordan. I'm sure he's going to... I haven't read the book again, but I'm sure he's going to, like, realize the error of his ways and, like, try to save the books or whatever. And I'm very excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that I don't know very much about this adaptation, but I do, from what I've read in terms of casting, it does kind of sound like they're trying to bring it, like, obviously they're not going to take away from the idea of, like, physically burning books, but they are kind of trying to bring it into this century a little bit more. YouTuber Lily Singh, who goes by II Superwoman II over on that outlet, not outlet, that platform, she has actually been cast in this to play a vlogger who assists the firemen in terms of putting out propaganda with regards to why books are bad and things like that. So it just kind of sound like they're taking, you know, steps that that still kind of fit into this world, and it kind of making it so this is a little bit more modern, which I think will provide a very interesting kind of taste while still keeping true to the spirit of Ray Bradbury's story.
Agreed. Very exciting.
Yeah. So we have a little bit more exciting news on the film front. It's the movie. It kind of sounds like I'm going to start a sentence with just like, you know.
I know.
It was a fine summer day. So Stephen King's It was recently adapted again for the big screen or just this past year, actually, in September, and was a box office hit. So naturally, they're looking into making a sequel. And really interestingly, actually, we found out that Jessica Chastain is currently in negotiations to star in the upcoming sequel, which is really cool because director Andy Muschietti, who, you know, helmed this most recent adaptation of It, actually revealed in an interview with Variety just last year that he would be thrilled if Chastain came on board to play an adult version of one of the kids named Beverly in the 2017 movie. She was kind of they brought it up as like a fan casting kind of situation, but Chastain and Muschietti have worked together before on a film called Mama, and Chastain would just like, she kind of looks a little bit like the younger actress Sophia Lillis who plays Beverly in the movie. So it just kind of is like a perfect storm if they're able to get her. She is in early negotiation, so shouldn't get too excited yet, but it would be really cool to kind of see her hop on board with this, I think, because he also said just last year that what he would like to tackle in the sequel is kind of spending some time on the dialogue between the two timelines that are going to exist. So obviously, like, the first installment deals with the children first coming across Pennywise, the dancing clown, and then in the sequel, they'll be older and returning back to their hometown to kind of face their fear once again. So it sounds like they're going to kind of jump around from timeline to timeline, and he's looking to make it a little bit more seamless when he does that, but also kind of making sure to take time to, you know, spend the appropriate time in both of these characters' lives, like points in their lives and stuff like that. So it'll be really cool to find out if she actually hops on board on the project. And they've already got a proposed release date for It, the sequel. It's set to come out on September 6th, 2019.
Cool. I haven't watched the first one. I think I would be too scared. But I did see, it's funny because Jessica Chastain was obviously a big fan casting right after the movie came out. But on Hypeable, when this was announced, I saw a lot of people being like, no, we don't want her. Keep her away from it. Like, really weird.
That is really weird.
I didn't know anyone was anti-Jessica Chastain.
I didn't either. Is she like the new Anne Hathaway?
I guess so. I don't know.
Oh, that's too bad. I like her.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, maybe that's exactly what she is. But she's great.
Yeah.
Actually, Anne Hathaway's great too.
I've never heard her announced in a project and been like, oh, Jessica Chastain. But I also don't feel that way about Anne Hathaway, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a surprise. Here's someone whose name also starts with a J. And who people are
whose
also...
Whose name also strikes fear into the hearts of many, apparently. Yes.
Who's also the new Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway did play Catwoman, so we're like halfway through a segue.
Oh, man.
You guys all know what we're talking about. Joss Whedon has left the Batgirl project. He was set to write the script, but he has stepped down, citing issues getting the story to work. People are dancing in the streets, celebrating. If you can hear noise outside, it's people being excited. Everyone's happy, except, I don't know, guys. I have some thoughts. I think that, obviously, this came out on the February 22nd. He said in a statement to The Hollywood Reporter, Batgirl is such an exciting project. Warner's DC, such collaborative and supportive partners. It took me months to realize I really didn't have a story. I'm grateful to Geoff Johns and Warner Pictures Group President Toby Emmerich and everyone who was so welcoming when I arrived and so understanding when I, is there a sexier word for failed? And that's it. That's his comment. So to me, this seems like he has but will not acknowledge the concerns that people have had, especially after the release of his Wonder Woman script. I think that whether as a reaction to that or whether as a nervous reaction to that, I think it has been very difficult for him to find a story. When he says he can't find a story, I don't think we should take that in the derisive way of like, ha ha, he can't make up a story. I think it should be, he can't make up a story that he feels like will be good enough, which I think is a good call. I think it was right for him to step back. I'm happy. I will just say that everyone knows that I like whatever people say about Avengers and all of that. Like, I will never stop thinking that Joss Whedon has done extremely important and great work. And I was not going to necessarily judge the Batgirl movie before I saw it, but I was from the beginning agreed with everyone who said that they really should have a woman, perhaps even a woman of color. Gail Simone has volunteered her talents. I think they should take her up on it to take on the story. You know, we're in a different time, maybe in like maybe 10 years ago again, a Joss Whedon Batgirl movie would have been great and felt like progress. But I think it no longer feels like progress. And I'm not saying every movie has to feel like progress, but as many as possible should feel like progress. So I think this is for the best. And I think that they should get a woman. Julie and Shauna Benson, who work on The 100, have done some comics. I would, you know, if anyone's listening, wink, wink, hire them as well. And I think this is fine, but I also think, you know, whatever Whedon does next, I will be curious to see it. I think he has a good mind, and I think he hopefully still has some good ideas in him that I would look forward to watching. You know, is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, we've made no secret of the fact that we've both have been really big fans of things that Joss has worked on. Specifically, you know, we talk about Buffy a lot on here. Mm. I think that he's
Dollhouse,
done a great
job. Dollhouse, also amazing.
Yeah, Dollhouse, like all that stuff. I think that he's done a great job of showcasing that it is possible for him to write a very strong willed female character. It's like, you know, but it, again, like, you know, maybe his voice just isn't the right fit for this and for this time that we're kind of expecting a little bit more from that, or from those kinds of movies. And you're right, there have been many women that have kind of tossed their name into the ring. I know that bad feminist author Roxane Gay also kind of made a few waves on Twitter just last week.
Oh, when did I say Gail Simone? I meant Roxane Gay.
Oh okay.
God.
I thought that Gail Simone had also said, yeah. Well, yeah. So Roxane Gay, she, you know, tweeted that she would love to take a crack at it. And they told her if she was serious to email them. So, you know, there's so many women out there that I know would jump at the chance. And you're right, now that Joss has exited, it's a great opportunity for DC to kind of show that they're not above hiring a badass female writer to helm this project.
Yep, which is great. I hope they get one. You know, if they go in and they hire the guy from Game of Thrones, then I'm probably going to be a little bit pissed off.
I know.
But we'll see. Exciting times. I think it has invigorated people's excitement in Batgirl, and that is really, at the end of the day, what we want. So, and Lindsay Morgan's name is still, you know,
oh,
on the table.
Oh, man. I would so love good. To see her play Batgirl.
I would love. She would be so good.
Like, she wouldn't genuinely even have to, like, she's already probably in tip-top shape, too, so.
She is, yeah.
I'm just saying.
She would be a great, like, very physical, very capable, just mm-hmm. very sassy Batgirl. Like, she has
and
all
super intense and, like, yeah. Commit. Yeah, she would be great. Mm-hmm. Let's make that happen in 2018.
Okay. That's our more, New Year's resolution.
We need more good things.
Yeah.
So speaking of female-led entities, it's no secret by this point that the CW has greenlit a Charmed reboot. This idea has been riddled in controversy since the new iteration of the Charmed reboot that they proposed, you know, went out to the masses, specifically because they were pegging it as a feminist reboot when the original series that was really big in the 90s was already kind of showing signs of being super feminist and, you know, showcasing three powerful women that were kicking ass and taking names and things like that. So they're already kind of off on the wrong foot, but they're going forward anyway. And we got a little bit of casting news surrounding the upcoming pilot that we're probably going to get for the 2018 season, I think. This is kind of part of the CW kind of put out a bunch of press releases where they talked about, you know, some of the projects that they had greenlit, and Charmed was amongst one of them, along with the Roswell reboot, which we've talked about before as well. So just last week, we learned that Shades of Blue actress Sarah Jeffrey had officially been cast as one of the three Pruitt sisters that are set to headline this new reboot over on the CW. And she's going to be playing a sister named Madison, who is the youngest and described as a bubbly college freshman. And the official synopsis for her character also kind of made it a point to mention that she kind of sees her ability to perform, you know, witchcraft as a bit of a hindrance because she's much more focused on trying to get into the sorority she really wants to join than, you know, fighting off bad guys and things like that. So it definitely sounds like this is not our Charmed, but I don't know. It's kind of hard to judge these reboots based on the synopsises, because I feel like sometimes they try and cater them to a specific audience, and then, you know, these shows come out and you're like, okay, this is not that bad, you know? So, but at the same time, it's also kind of like they've already started with a sour taste in fans' mouths because of the way that they've kind of tried to make it seem like the original was not what the reboot is going to be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's kind of tough with this one, honestly.
Honestly, and this is, I've been saying this all along, and I feel like kind of a fraud because I was never a Charmed fan, and I know a bunch of Charmed fans are really against this reboot. And it's kind of like the same thing we're seeing with Roswell. Me and, you know, we are both fans, and we have like people in our mentions because we follow a bunch of Roswell fans. I'm sure you have the same, Pam, just being so mad about the new reboot. But mm-hmm. I kind of feel a little bit better saying this because I know that I would feel the same if it was Buffy. Is that if these reboots like add diversity and help expand these worlds to other kinds of people, especially women, then I am all for them. Honestly, like I'm in full support of this. I know that the point of like, oh, make original stories instead of just rebooting the old things. But I don't think that's fair in a world where like, as we said, like there's going to be a million Star Wars movies and they keep making Harry Potter movies and they keep making Marvel movies and all that stuff. And like whenever you talk about representation in those movies, you get the same kind of like, no, just do your own movie and put the representation in there. And you're kind of like, yeah, no, but it's not the same because you need the brand. And I think on television, how you get the brand is by going back to an old property and cashing in on the nostalgia value, but then using that as a platform to tell new and diverse stories. You know, I think One Day at a Time does that. I think that both the Charmed and the Roswell reboots are doing that. And I, you know, because this is CW and it should be very clear to everyone at this point what the CW is actually doing, which is casting diverse people in all of its projects. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of obvious that they were going this direction with it. And so I'm really excited to see these casts. I know there's going to be like at least one LGBT sister in here, which is nice. It looks, I don't know if they're going to be half sisters or adopted or what's going to happen, but there's going to be a lot of like diversity just within Pruitt, I guess, instead of Halliwell. Was it Pruitt? No, I don't even know. Anyway, I understand. I totally understand why people are feeling protective about the original property, but there also has to come a point when we have to say, okay, well, the 90s offered a very limited kind of feminism. It was feminism, and it did do a lot to advance us, but we are a long way away from that now, and we need to have open minds to say, well, yeah, there are other people who want to enjoy these worlds too. You know?
And that's the thing too, that it's kind of hard because you're right. Like, diversity is always like super important. And it's funny that you mentioned that because at another publication that I write for, the editor asked me to like, back when the original idea for the reboot was to set it in the past, she asked me to fan cast for like with the idea that maybe the CW would change their minds and do like a whole new reboot, but with the same characters. And I was like, okay, I can do that. And I'm blanking on the name, but there is one sister that's a half sister in Charmed. And I think you're right, Paige. And in my fan casting, I was like, oh, well, since she's a half sister, like, I picked Kylie Bunbury just because she had just come off of Pitch, and I wanted to see her in more. And I got so much backlash for that because they're like, oh, did she's black, really? She can't be a sister. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Mm. I don't engage usually with commenters and stuff like that because it's just better for my mental health not to. But I was really happy that there, like, for every comment where people were like, she can't be a Halliwell because she's black, other people were saying, like, well, actually, she's a half sister, so technically she could be black, you know? But also, like, I could have cast all black women.
Yes, you could have.
Piper, Prue, and Phoebe, and it wouldn't have mattered because guess what? It's a reboot, you know? Right. And it's just like, at the end of the day, it was an assignment that I did because that's what you do at work. They tell you to do things and you do them. But it's just kind of sad that there are so many people out there that can't possibly fathom the idea of opening their minds to something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so weird. And I don't, I'm sorry, but it's hard to sort of stand with those kinds of fans, though the point of, and I think it was Holly Marie Combs as well, was out saying how she's really against this new reboot and she wants to protect her property, and I get it, but I also don't agree with it, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agreed with her commenting on how it was kind of silly for the CW to kind of make people believe that the original was not super like girl powery when it was like literally they were girls with powers. But I don't agree with the idea that, you know, like you know, we've given the example of One Day at a Time before, like if you can reboot something and capture the essence of the original, but also put forth like a whole new set of rich characters that are completely different and that shine a spotlight on voices that are not often heard on the small screen or on the big screen, then, you know, that's great too. Mm-hmm. And I'm always going to protect that. So,
yeah, agreed.
Okay, one more bit of casting news here on the TV front. The Netflix Riverdale spinoff, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, is rounding out their cast of characters. And we learned while we were away that they've cast two new series regulars. And the reason that I wanted to bring this up was just basically because I feel like we hadn't gotten too much information with regards to the plot, other than that it was going to be darker and like not your childhood Sabrina the Teenage Witch. But what I love about these casting announcements is that they kind of give you a little bit more of a sense of what the story might be like, because, you know, you learn a little bit more about the characters that we're going to see. So the two actors that were cast in the upcoming Netflix series were Michelle Gomez and Chance Perdomo, and both, like I said, will be series regulars. First up, Perdomo will be playing Ambrose Spellman, who is Sabrina's cousin, and he is from England, and he's a warlock, but he's actually kind of on house arrest. We're not really sure why yet. We just have heard that the Witch's Council has ordered him not to leave the Spellman funeral home where he lives with the other Spellman women. But he does like sneak out and wreak havoc with Sabrina because he's still a teenager and stuff like that. So he is kind of tagged as her partner in crime, and it should be kind of fun to see how they develop that relationship. And then it also sounds like Gomez is going to be playing the season's big bad. Her character's name is Mary Wardell, and she's a teacher at Baxter High, where Sabrina goes to school, and starts off as one of Sabrina's mentors and her favorite teacher, but she eventually gets possessed by the devil's handmaiden, and she ends up kind of making it her mission to try to lure Sabrina down the path of darkness instead of, you know, sticking with lighter magic. So should be interesting to see how that plays out too. I feel like this character out of all the characters sounds the most hokey. So we'll see how we get on when we get a little bit more details with regards to what this new iteration of Sabrina entails. And then of course, Kiernan Shipka was cast earlier this year to play Sabrina, and I love her, so it'll be fun to see what she does with the role.
I'm so freaking excited for Eowyn.
Yes.
I'm so happy. I didn't realize how much I missed Miranda Otto's face on my screen.
Oh.
So that's really cool, and I'm just really excited about this. Like, it's so funny with Sabrina because I watched it, you know, I remember mm-hmm. it, but I never, it's kind of like, for some reason, Sabrina and The Nanny have like blended together in my brain.
I feel like they have very similar houses, like yeah. very white and airy.
Didn't they?
You know,
and there was something yeah. about like the women, like maybe it was like the same set, or like there was something about some ants and stuff. I feel like in The Nanny, and I know she didn't have a talking cat, but like in my head, I feel like The Nanny was The Nanny to Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, which I know is not. Anyway, it's totally beside
That's
the point.
That's really funny.
But yeah, so I don't remember it that well, is what I'm trying to say. But I do remember it. And I think this could be really interesting. It's any connection it has to Riverdale is like turning me all the way off. But any casting announcement that they make is like kind of getting my excitement back. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I honestly think that the fact that it is on Netflix kind of probably adds to the excitement, because there's so much more room to play over there, because it is kind of like, you know, it's like the difference between having a show on NBC versus having a show on HBO. It's like, you know, that they can go darker if they want to, and they're not scared to do that. So, yeah, it'll be really cool to see what they do with it.
a pansexual like main character is kind of cool. We never see
that's true.
That really cool. And he's a person of color. Like, it's just, it's all great. Like, speaking of representation, it's just wonderful. Cool, cool. Okay, so our final story in the doc is we're going up and down this week in terms of excitement. This is just a fun little story I wanted to put in here. So Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, speaking of franchises that don't know how to end, is obviously coming to New York very soon, and they've been doing some promotion for it. And Sonia Friedman, who is one of the producers of Cursed Child, which, if you don't know, is two parts, it's 5 hours long, she said that the reason that they can make it so long is because the majority of the fan base are adults now, and she didn't say they have disposable income, but I assume that's what she means. And the fans like it so much, in fact, that they would like a part three. So another couple of hours tagged on here. Now, this has been getting a lot of sort of funny comments on the internet, because clearly people are aware that the story is trash and they absolutely do not want a part three. But having seen the play, and soon, like, I can't like claim that as a particular honor anymore because it's coming to America soon, but having seen the play, I will say, like, I could have gone for a part three because it's such a good performance play. Like, you just, you want to see these characters inhabit these roles more, and you want to see some more of the amazing stage magic. And even being 5 hours long and with all of the absolutely ridiculous stories they told, it feels like there were stories that they could have told that they didn't. Like, you know, there was no Neville in the play. Like, everyone knows this. There's a bunch of things that just weren't really present, you know? So I'm not, like, I'm not totally disagreeing with her, but I also think that it is already a completely absurd commitment to ask people to travel to New York. Like, I was just in London, or no, I didn't, I wasn't in London. I thought I was in London. I wanted to go to London for my birthday for just like the day, but then it was like, it's not that expensive, but it was like more expensive than my budget. And then I was thinking, like, maybe I could like win the Friday 40 and go see Cursed Child, but then I was like, well, no, because like they wouldn't be on the same day. I would have to get a hotel. I would have to stay there the whole weekend just to say, see this play. And I can't afford that. So having three parts is kind of outrageous to demand that of your audience. It's kind of like a money grab at this point, because it doesn't need to be three parts. And also, it's absurd. Like, we don't actually need more. But then again, part three,
I don't trust them anymore.
Makes Corbis canon. So...
I know.
Good sign. No, I'm just kidding. Obviously, they're never going to make Scorpius canon, no matter how many parts. But, like, it's just a funny comment. And it's, like, it's funny to kind of unpack it, because, like, I do see what she means.
Yeah, but talk about being tone deaf to a complete other side of, like, you know. Right. Yeah. But maybe not, because, you know, it's kind of hard. Just maybe do the part three, but, don't release it in book form. Because yeah. I do think that Cursed Child falls flat, like, on the page, you know?
Oh, it 100%. But you know what? I do really think that one thing that has always bothered me about Cursed Child, and I know she was just kidding, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but the one thing that has bothered me is the insane kind of, you don't think about the wealth gap in terms of who gets to see this play and who don't get to see this play. And I think that that's one thing that people don't really consider, because, you know, we have a lot of people who just are like, oh, well, then I went to the theme park, and then I went to the blah, 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 and then I went to the studio tour, and then I went to see the play. And obviously I have to find money to go see this play. But it's a, like, people don't have the money for this necessarily. They don't have the money to go to New York. They certainly don't have the money to go and stay there for a whole weekend for Cursed Child, like some people do, but they're shutting out such a massive amount of people. Like J.K. Rowling's comment, you'll see it, is a completely absurd and out of touch with the reality of most of the people around the world who will never get to see it. And so the idea that fans like it so much they would like part three, yeah, maybe the super like rich sort of disposable income of British people who live in the London area who can go see it easily. But no, I'm sorry, there's no reason for me to get upset.
No, I think that it's
but I would
a
not
really
be able
good
to go
point
see it, you know?
Because
so
even
I'm, like
frustrated. Well, yeah, but even like the theater in New York, like even when I was living there, I could not afford more than like, you know, a $30 ticket for a show, and I only saw two when I was there.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's like
that's,
three.
And I feel like that's pretty good because it gets expensive, you know? Yeah. And I can't imagine being like when we were growing up, like I've been a big fan of like musical theater for a very, very long time. And I think when I was younger, I never really understood why like my mom couldn't take us to see Phantom of the Opera or Cats or things that, you know, we're touring in San Francisco. And then you grow up and you realize, well, yeah, it's because my mom's a single mom and she has to pay for three people. Right. And it's like $200. You know what I mean? It's not like you're going absolutely. By yourself. Like one person paying $30 for a ticket if you win a lottery is like, okay, that's pretty good. But like as soon as that starts adding up and then you have to factor in parking prices and like all this other stuff, it's like, it's not a cheap excursion. So I totally get what you're saying. At the same time, I don't know if like they've officially announced this, but a friend of mine was at the Pantages in LA seeing Aladdin, and they already have like advertisement for the LA version of Cursed Child. Like, so at some point soon it's going to start traveling. Yeah. But again, it's going to be a matter of if you have the disposable income, because, you know, I tried for months while Hamilton was here in San Francisco to get lottery tickets because I couldn't afford regular tickets and I didn't win. So,
Yeah, it's also just like the tickets that like most of the tickets are like super expensive and you have to get for 2 days, probably two parts.
That too,
the ones
on
the same day are like expensive and like it just demands that people don't only like travel in one day and go see the play and go home on like cheap travel, but that they actively plan to stay somewhere unless they happen to live in that city. And I think that is like, it really annoys me, and I really hope it's not like a sign of things to come in the theater community that they start splitting it up like that.
Oh God, I hope not. I feel like I'm hoping this is the anomaly.
Anyway, that was random. Back to happier things. We have some TV shows of the week to talk about. And I will just do, I guess I'll just really briefly say that I caught up on One Day at a Time season 2. And I know maybe we'll do like a special on it at some point. I don't know. I really loved it. I know people are like still watching it. I guess I caught it like right when it came out. I was pretty lucky, but I really loved it. I think it picked up perfectly on some of the things that were set up in season 1. It's really serialized. I really wonder if it actually goes on, like how it will feel when it's all complete, because it feels really like it one, like seasons 1 and 2 feel like one of a piece, you know? And it went to some really interesting places, and I really love what they're doing with Elena. I really love what they're doing with Abuelita, I forget her name. And I accidentally started shipping Penelope and Snyder. Sorry. I know you don't.
I just did it. You know what? I think there's like so much going on that I'm so obtuse to it, unless it's like banging, you know, over my head.
I'm glad you finished that sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I think sometimes I need people to like wave it in front of my face. Like
right.
This
you need
is
people
it.
To bang over your head before you get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Sorry. It's late. I'm tired. Anyway, it was a good season. So why don't you talk about yours and then I have one more.
Okay, sure. Netflix obviously has been coming out with a bunch of other shows, and I kept hearing everybody talking about Everything Sucks. And so I decided I would give it a go, and it definitely is very much on the, like, along the lines of Freaks and Geeks, kind of, in the sense that it is like a period piece. I can't believe that the 90s have to be a period piece. There has to be another word for that, but that's the only one I can think of that kind of makes sense. It's a coming of age dramedy set in the 90s. And honestly, like the big reason why I decided to give it a shot is because everybody was talking about how like music kind of plays a central part of transporting you into that time. And you guys know me, anytime that music becomes a central character in something, I'm there. So like the trash I am, I went to check out this show and it's really, really cute. I think it takes a couple of episodes to really kind of pick things up. But by like the second episode, I was kind of like really invested in the characters. The main characters are kind of like these nerdy kids that are just going into high school and they are joining the AV club, of course, because that's what nerdy high school kids did in the 90s, I guess. And then like the cool kids that they kind of have like some run-ins with are the drama kids, which is kind of interesting because I feel like drama wasn't really cool until like the 2000s, but I don't know. Anyway, it works really well. And there is a character that's grappling with her sexual identity on this show, which I think is really great because we kind of don't usually see that through the lens of a time when LGBTQIA, you know, actual individuals were able to kind of explore their sexualities on screen. So I think that that's really cool. The music is really great in this as well. There's a lot of really funny little nods to kind of songs that have grown a life of their own in this show as well. And I'm going to keep watching. I'm about 5 episodes in, but my brother and I, like my brother came in when I was like 15 minutes into the pilot. And then we ended up watching like 5 episodes that night. So it's really easily bingeable and the episodes are about 30 minutes long. So it's really easy to kind of like get the rhythm of what they're trying to do. And if you've seen it, I would love to know what you think.
Cool. I have not seen it yet, but I heard good things. My brother really loves this.
Actually. Oh, cool.
So yeah, I tried watching the other show that has a similar name, The End of the Effing World. I was not fan of that one.
Yeah, I tried watching that too, and I kind of like don't really get it, but I want to understand, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so I'm still watching, but not as quickly as I would be something else, basically. Mm.
Well, let me know if you get to understand it, because I think I watched like an episode and I was like, yeah, no, it's not for me.
Yeah. I have, you have one more, and then I wanted just to really quickly talk about one more thing too. Just
okay,
a little bit different.
Okay.
Yeah.
So mine was just The Good Place season 2. It's wrapped up and I caught the finale a couple of weeks back. I just haven't been on to talk about it. So I had some issues with The Good Place season 2 in general. I think that I really loved season 1. I was worried about the finale twist. I think I talked about this on Hype too. Like I was worried that all the stuff it had set up in season 1 was kind of erased when they like kind of, you know, reset it all. And I think that was kind of true for me in season 2, that the fact that they kept sort of resetting and then they kind of started fresh. I feel like a lot of the stories did not connect with me. I really didn't appreciate what they did with Tahani. I think that by erasing the characters, they lost some of the complexity, and that I think the season suffered for that and it kind of stagnated. But I really liked the finale and the end, like kind of a couple of episodes when it all came together, and season 3 is set to go another whole unexpected, very interesting place. I do appreciate their commitment to the shock. My worry for The Good Place moving forward is that they are kind of riding to the big finish every season. So that's what I felt in season 2, that a lot of what happened was like inconsequential because they already knew where they were going to end the season and that none of it was going to matter anyway. So I really hope that maybe we can have a version of The Good Place when they are allowed to remember themselves and to actually move forward in the places that they are, so they don't need to kind of like sitcom reset it every season, because I think that that kind of takes away from my enjoyment of the show. But really good couple of last episodes, not as good of a season as season 1, but I'm still very excited for season 3 and I'm still very much on board, all things considered. So that is my review.
Yay. Love it. One more thing that I wanted to bring up, because I feel like, I've been trying to do more like documentary type things on here too, because I know some people are like really into that. But if you do have Netflix, I just started watching Ugly Delicious as well. It's a food based docuseries, and it follows Chef Dave Chang on his quest to kind of explore different kinds of food. And I just watched the first episode, which is called Pizza, because it centers around pizza. But I really, really like it because I watch some kind of food stuff with my mom because she's kind of really into that on the Travel Channel and stuff. But I've never really seen anything quite like this before. And I just really, really enjoyed the first episode. So I'm going to keep watching. So I thought that I would, you know, kind of toss it out there in case you guys have heard about it and you've been thinking about checking it out, but you weren't sure. Yeah, the first episode's really great because, like, you know, I think that pizza is kind of like this thing that people eat all around the world. But I really loved that he pegged it around the idea of authenticity and what constitutes as like pizza and how like different cultures around the world celebrate that specific type of food and whether or not they think like what they classify as authentic in terms of like taste and flavors and ingredients and things like that. And he goes everywhere from like New York to New Haven to Italy to Japan to Copenhagen and just talks to all these different chefs that have mastered the craft of creating, you know, their country's perfect pie. And he talks to them about how they have kind of found their own fusion in it and whether or not they think it's authentic to like the Neapolitan pizza that originated in Naples and things like that. So I just thought it was really, really cool and a great exploration of different cultures. And yeah, I just thought it was really interesting. So if you're looking for like kind of like a more like true life documentary series type of thing and you're into being a foodie and stuff like that, I would check that out because I really, really enjoyed the first episode and I will be excited to watch more. It's not like a thing that you watch like in one big load, but I did enjoy episode one. So there you go.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. Different recommendation. I like it. So we're going to finish now quickly with listener feedback where we hear from our listeners. We have a whole bunch of tweets, so I think we should just try to get through them. I will take the first one from the Lady Ash who says, I very much enjoyed the most recent episode. Thank you for all you said in regards to the Potter fandom right now. So this was about our discussion on J.K. Rowling a couple of weeks ago. Thank you so much for saying that, the Lady Ash. I think we're all kind of struggling to comprehend all of this. But I've seen some really good think pieces about it as well. I want to shout out really quickly on MuggleNet, HPBoy13. I had a really good piece up that I think is worth the read. It was Meg, I think, that pointed me to that one. So really good. Do you want to get the next one?
Sure. Laura Morrow says, my email to you all in September just came true. This will be the last season of Once Upon a Time. And I totally called it. Yes, that's right. While we were away.
Did we talk about that?
Yes, I briefly recapped that last
episode.
Okay,
good, good.
But once again, while we were away, we found out that Once Upon a Time season 7 would be the last season, and I think that that's a good call. So,
yeah,
yes,
totally agree.
Vindicated. I feel like everybody was vindicated when that news broke. Laura also says, so I may have just bought a Switch and Breath of the Wild. I totally blame you. Did we talk about these? Did you talk about these?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I thought that these were books. It's too early. I get it now. Nintendo Switch and she bought Breath of the Wild. Yes, got it. I totally blame you both. It has been years since I played any video games. Wish me luck. Also, okay, Black Lightning is pretty awesome. And it has the football player of Heart of Dixie as the lead. He is quite handsome.
She also says,
can report, I loved Black Panther so much. I loved all the characters, but especially the diverse cast and the strong female and male characters. Very impressed.
Yes. H. Mitchell NYC says, instead of the Charmed reboot, just release The Circle. The books were great and the first season wasn't bad. Bring it back, The CW. Do they mean The Secret Circle? Although I think there was a thing called The Circle, yeah?
Yeah, I feel like, oh no, the book was called The Secret Circle too, right?
Yeah, I think so. The Circle might be like a thing that they're talking about.
The Circle is also a movie, but I think he's talking about the show.
I think so, too, in which case I agree 1,000,000,000% bring back the Secret Circle. I feel like the Secret Circle, along with, like, Selfie and Pitch and, like, Agent Carter, are probably the four shows that I would genuinely bring back because I think they had more story to tell, not just because I thought they were kind of cool. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Yes, agreed.
Ashley Barnes says, I'm so worried. I love Queer Eye, but I'm so nervous that Netflix won't give us enough of it because they always cancel the diverse shows. Okay, I'm mostly still bitter about Sense8. Haha. Yes. Ashley, thank you, because Queer Eye is amazing. It's so good. I've made like everybody I know watch Netflix's new Queer Eye. And I'm going to like say it again. If you have not seen it and you're going to start it, just keep the tissues handy because the tears will come, but they will be merited. And it's such a lovely, heartwarming show. And I do hope that Netflix brings it back. It's been getting so much traction on Twitter, so I'm hopeful, but at the same time, she's right. Like, Sense8 also had a very, very passionate core fan base, and they clearly didn't listen. So, fingers crossed that they've learned their lesson.
So, I am just curious. I'm like 90% sure this is not a documentary, right?
It's a reality makeover series. Yeah.
Because I was really confused because I didn't see the original. Mm-hmm. And the way people are talking about it on Twitter, I really could not tell if these were real people or if it was fiction. But okay, I'm glad to know. I actually thought it was fiction, but okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like, honestly, it was one of those things that I didn't think I was really going to watch. And I was looking for something to kind of sink my teeth into. And I saw that they had screeners up on the Netflix press site, which is really nice that they do that for us sometimes. And yeah, so I caught it a little bit early and I wasn't expecting to kind of really fall in love with the idea of it, but I did. And it's my mom actually watched the original iteration of the show that was out in the 90s, I think, or maybe the early O's, somewhere around there. And she says because she started just watching the new one this past weekend. And she said, you know, I remember the original and it did a really great job of like breaking down stereotypes and things like that, because there weren't a lot of gay men on the small screen back then. She said, but I don't remember it being quite like this. And so she said that this was like leaps and bounds, like it, but also because, like, you know, we're living in 2018, so they have to do something a little bit different than just like, we're going to give you a new wardrobe, we're going to help you, you know, be more like positive about yourself. Like, this is like way different because it has to be, because we're living in a different time. And I think that they do a really great job of kind of, you know, making it not necessarily just about the materialistic things of helping people, like, you know, like redo like the insides, the interiors of their houses and like the exteriors of like their wardrobe and stuff like that. But they really, they do a lot with, helping people with personal growth and also shining a spotlight on, like real issues. Like there's this really great, actually episode 3 is wonderful. And, they help out this guy who's a cop who's kind of let himself go. And there is, a black member of this cast, and they have like this really compelling, talk, because this is all based in Atlanta for the first season, about Black Lives Matter and like police relations and like the turmoil surrounding both of those groups. And it just kind of sets the tone for the rest of the season and kind of like really, I think, captures the spirit of what they're trying to do with the show, which is kind of like not necessarily just embrace the idea of tolerance, but also just like of acceptance of all different kinds of people. So yeah.
All right. It's cool. Great. So let's get through the rest of these comments. Megan Carl, I'm not sure it's me, but I'll just. Megan Carlisle says, watching Wonder Woman with the family. Fourth time seeing it for me. I love it so much. Now we're watching Get Out. Great movie night.
Jewel Gamache has been catching up on the show and filling in a Goodreads group. That's right. Jewel spearheads our Hype Goodreads group, and she's done a great job of aggregating all of the books that we've ever talked about on the show. So if you forget, you know, a title of a book and you don't want to go back and like listen to the episode to find it, you can head over to the Goodreads group that Jewel has created, and you'll find all the titles there. So these are some of the tweets that she sent us while she was catching up. First, she said, I finally binged Big Little Lies and I loved it. I can't wait for more. I love the complicated storylines. Also, high fives for The Runaways and Mrs. Maisel. She also says, I have reached episode 158 Hype House Calls, and I really love the format for when you're down a host. As much as I love the other hypeable writers, it's cool to hear from fellow listeners. And then the last tweet she sent us was one that said, since I'm officially caught up on episodes now, woo, the current book count on our Goodreads group is 138 books. It feels like a lot, but also
I know, right? I'm adding some more next week, Jules. Stay tuned. Thank you so much again for doing that for us. We say thank you every time, but we mean it every time. It's so cool to have that resource. And finally, Jessica says, hi, I also read Artemis, and yes, it is definitely not as good as The Martian. I like it, but the science went over my head in a way that The Martian did not. Also, Jazz was okay, but she really felt like a female character written by a guy. So, yeah, totally agree. Just read The Martian. It's very good. All right. And if you guys want to leave a comment, as everyone has done this week, then first of all, thank you, everyone, for contributing. You can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can send us a tweet at hypeablehype. You can leave us a comment on Hypeable, which is hypeable.com in the podcast section. You can also find us on Instagram at hypeablehype and on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And we also have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, where you can subscribe for $2 a month and you get weekly bonus discussions as well as other fun features. What's our Patreon bonus topic this week, Pam?
I don't know. Actually, I do. I wanted to talk about Roswell.
Oh, my God. That's perfect. Because we got some casting. I love it. I'm surprised and excited. So everyone who's a patron, you can listen to our Roswell, apparently, discussion that we're going to be recording right after this. Thank you for thinking of that so quickly, Pam. And until next week, have a wonderful week, everyone. And we will talk to you for episode 180. My name is Selena. What's your name? A woman has no name. Her name is Pam. I don't know if she, what happened, but this is the end. I'm going to go find Pam now. Bye.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Selena, my internet just cut out, but I'm just going to do my outro name and then you can splice it in there. And I'm Pamela. Bye, guys.